Hi, everybody. I'm Rick Sanchez, and this is Direct Impact, where we share the type of truth bombs that are too often too impactful for many of those in the Western media. We have lined up seven of the top stories that have occurred over the past week, and we're going to be talking about many of them. The U.S., what it's doing or isn't doing, right, in Gaza. That was kind of bizarre, by the way. Also, Don Lemon. Got to talk about my old pal, Don Lemon. He decided that he should interrogate Elon Musk. Lots to say on that and much more, starting right now. Nothing like starting with a very deep, husky voice. Did you like that? Okay, here we go. Joining me now to talk about the issues of the day are Ed Martin. He's the president of the Phyllis Schlafly Eagles. Dr. Wilmer Leon. He's a political scientist and the co-host of The Critical Hour on Radio Sputnik. And the other co-host who happens to be gracing us with his presence today is political analyst Garland Nixon. My thanks to you gentlemen for being here with us. And we're going to start, well, with, I think, one of the most bizarre stories I've seen in a long time. I want you to tell me what you make of this. This is the U.S. government, under the leadership of President Joe Biden, dropping shipments of food to feed the Palestinians in the area of Gaza. But something happened when one of those big, giant shipments fell on top of the people we were trying to feed, and we killed five of them. All right, let's watch this video now. You ready? This is pretty much the way we're dropping these things. You can see from the size of them, apparently they have like little box lunches. I mean, for all we know, we're dropping tuna fish sandwiches into Gaza so that people can be fed. And they drop from the sky, and apparently there's enough there to feed maybe one family for one day of the week out of seven. So it's really not a lot. But we're doing this, and then we're also supposedly establishing a bridge off the coast of the sea there so that we can have our troops do this, while we're also giving them billions of dollars so that they can kill the Palestinians. It's a bizarre policy, and I don't know what to make of it. So I'm going to let you kind of get us started. Dr. Wilmer Leon, go.
Well, I think it was 124,000 meals to feed 2.1 million people.
that won't go a long way.
That doesn't, at any drive-through, that's not going to work out well for you. Why did we have to drop the food in when it could have been driven in?
Pictures? Optics? They were impressive. Did you see the? It looked like the Marines landing, but they were actually boxes.
A lot of the pallets seemed to go into the Mediterranean Sea, as opposed, because I saw people swimming out to try to retrieve these. So this was a really poorly framed photo op. And once again, it seems as though the Biden administration is trying to have both sides of the argument at the same time.
Yeah, what do you make of that, guys? The idea that, has there ever been a time in history where a country has been killing people and then trying to feed them at the same time?
I can't think of it, but I would say this. You brought something up. The competency crisis is stunning, isn't it?
Yeah.
Whatever the messaging was supposed to be, it wasn't clear to anybody. And as you say, there's killing on both sides. I mean, meaning both sides, it's all happening to Gazans and people in Gaza. But the competency, the messaging, all of it is like they're not even trying at this point.
Well, I think I know what they're doing. I think it's political.
Yeah, absolutely. And what we've got here.
I mean, they're worried about the guy's poll numbers, and they're saying, okay, you've been given all this money to help, kill the Palestinians, 30-some thousand at this point, which does seem over the top, to use the president's own words. But now he says, well, I know I'm helping to kill them, but now I want to feed them, too.
And interestingly enough, it portrays an atmosphere of weakness. You know, the Biden administration is always talking about looking strong versus looking weak. We want to show China, Russia, whoever, that we look strong. However, in this instance, how weak do you look when a government that you support materially can tell you where you can go and when you can go there? Mm. We can't even drive in. Israel says, no, you can't come in. We can't come in. So how can you look weak to strong to Putin or China or whoever if Benjamin Netanyahu is ordering you around like a slave?
Save your thoughts on this, because I have something I'm going to share with you having to do with what you just said. But right now, I want to go to my other friend, Bill Maher. I want you to hear something. This is Bill Maher with a guy named Dave Rubin saying that they literally say this. They literally say this, okay? They say that the White House should fire all the staff who has protested or spoken out in difference with the president's policies. Take a listen.
Weeks ago, members of the White House staff protested against their own president. We are congressional staffers on Capitol Hill also, and we are no longer comfortable staying silent. Well, you're staffers. You're supposed to stay silent. What are you talking about?
Yeah, you fired
them. My boss is doing a job, and I thought I'd go public with it. I mean, this is hundreds of people in Biden's staff and on congressional Democrat staff who are publicly going against them because they're not supporting Hamas enough.
You fire them, period. You fire all of them. That's it.
How dare you disagree with the king? To you, Mr. Martin.
Well, I'm going to disagree with you. Of course. Of course. Yeah, you, this is like when you're a Marine. I remember my brother, the Marine, I said, what happens when you become a Marine? Do you have free speech? He said, no, they take your free speech on the way in. You don't have free speech. Uh-huh. And when you're a staffer, we talked offline. I think Abe Lincoln famously had the team of rivals. That was the cabinet secretaries. Those are political entities. Staffers?
Well, let me ask you this. Why staffers, was you and I were here on this very set during the administration of one Donald Trump.
Yeah.
When I was hearing every day from members of the media, why isn't that enough people in his cabinet, enough people in his staff? Why don't enough people in his administration stand up and protect us from this madman? That's what they were saying. Now, these same guys are here saying we want them fired if they criticize the president.
But I'm not defending Bill Maher Dave Rubin in their consistency. I'm saying if I ran a staff and it was that kind of staff, it's like your team.
Right.
In regards to your work, you've got to have some consistency. And there.
So are you saying it's okay to criticize, just don't criticize publicly?
Correct,
to yourself?
Of course. Right.
So you're against whistleblowers?
Whistleblowers are a different thing. That's somebody who comes forward for protection. But I mean, in terms of a staffer going to a protest event, and by the way, the other thing you should do is quit. If you can't take it, if you work for a political elected official, if you change your position and can't stand it, you should quit.
I do disagree with you, but go ahead.
I kind of agree with him on that, particularly when it comes to
this
issue.
Two against one. Let's go to the next guy.
But when you put it in context, here's the thing. These people also agree with 77% of the Democratic Party.
Well, mm-hmm.
So are you going to fire 77% of the constituents that you want to vote for us also? That's the context.
It looks like Biden's lost about 70% of the
Democratic
Party.
There's a greater
because
context
of these policies.
Yeah,
I mean,
exactly.
It's not just Gaza.
Right.
It's Ukraine. It's Gaza. It's a whole bunch of
everything.
Stuff.
Right.
Two things. Bill Maher is supposed to be the counterculture guy. Isn't he? Bill Maher is supposed to be the one that...
Or he was?
There we go.
Yeah.
And the other point here is, we're not talking policy on Social Security. We're not talking about people having a problem with tax policy. These people are opposed to genocide.
Mm-hmm.
They're speaking out about genocide.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. How could they be so trivial?
By the way, and I'm going to say this because I know you're going to disagree with me on this, but I have a pretty strong feeling. I've been a news reporter all of my life. I've covered disturbances. Sometimes we call them riots. I covered the Liberty City ones. I covered the ones in Overtown. I've probably covered throughout my life, seen bullets whiz by my head, seen fires, seen police officers in the streets fighting with people. I have seen so much of that in this country. And I just think to myself, and I do believe this is analogous, and you guys might tell me I'm full of crap on this, but I believe that if you have a community which is in defiance of the society or the government, as we saw in Overtown, as we saw during the George Floyd incident in Minneapolis, for example, it would be very easy for the U.S. government to bomb Minneapolis on that moment, or the neighborhoods where only the African-American people lived, who we knew were more with George Floyd and anti-police at that time, because they had an argument to be made. You could make the same argument that Israel should be finding a way to get those sons of guns who did what they did on the 7th, but not to be bombing indiscriminately all of the civilians. And it's the same as if the United States, during any one of the disturbances that I had covered, had just gone in there and bombed American communities, which I can't remember we doing. Who wants to take that?
Well, we have the defense secretary in Israel just today praising a soldier who shot a 13-year-old child.
Yeah.
And saying that that child was a terrorist and that soldier was a hero. And we were talking about this earlier today. That dehumanizing language of calling a 13-year-old child a terrorist and supporting the soldier that shot that kid shows you how the Palestinians have been totally dehumanized, mm-hmm. and that you might as well, in fact, I hate to use the term,
and what
shoot
we're talking
them like
about
a dog
a policy,
in the street,
by the, yeah.
because if you shot a dog like that, you'd go to jail.
Yeah, and what we're talking about, by the way, is a policy, okay? I get angry when people think, how dare you criticize Israel? I criticize my own country's foreign policy. How dare I then not criticize my, we should be having these conversations, and I think they're important. I'll let you button this up before I go to
well,
the next one.
Well, one thing I want to say, language is so important. If you believe that it's genocide, and I take that as your argument, then as a staffer, how can you go to work for a guy who is allowing genocide? I think, just like, by the way, I would say this is one of the dangerous things. I happen to support President Trump, a lot of his policies. When people call Trump Hitler, if you have a Hitler, you're morally obliged to stop yeah. Hitler. I mean, this is what the words mean. And so if someone says that guy Donald Trump is Hitler, you have to stop him. You don't have a choice.
Let me let you hear something real quick. This is an interview with, speaking of President Biden, the President of the United States sits down, and he's told by most of the people who are now handling his political situation, his polls are way down. I mean, down to almost 60% in terms of favorabilities, and he's losing to Donald Trump in most of the elections so far, or most of the polls that they've done on the election so far. So they put him in front of a camera, and he's supposed to say, okay, one of the ways you can get back some young people, young voters, is to talk tough on Israel. So here he is attempting to do that.
Do you have a red line? For instance, would invasion of Rafah, which you have urged him not to do, would that be a red line?
It is a red line, but I'm never going to leave Israel. The defense of Israel is still critical. So there's no red line. I'm going to cut off all weapons so they don't have the Iron Dome to protect them. They don't have. But there's red lines that if it crosses, and you cannot have 30,000 more Palestinians dead as a consequence of going out. There's other ways to deal with. With the trauma caused by Hamas. The first time I went over, I sat with them and I sat with a war captain. I said, look, don't make the mistake America made. America made a mistake. We went after bin Laden till we got him, but we shouldn't have gone into Ukraine. I mean, we shouldn't have gone into the whole thing in Iraq and Afghanistan.
We should not have gone into Ukraine, says the president who went into Ukraine. But that's not really what I want to talk about. Anybody can make a mistake. Stop laughing. I'm kidding. This is now to your point, Garland. Right after he's done saying that, and it's really political posturing, obviously, and all people do that, right? Republicans, Democrats, they told him, look, you got to come off and say something a little harsher. You got to criticize Bibi Netanyahu, which he really didn't.
Yeah.
But apparently Bibi did take it as a criticism because he comes back and ridicules the president of the United States. Take a listen.
Well, I don't know exactly what the president meant, but if he meant by that, then I'm pursuing private policies against the majority, the wish of the majority of Israelis, and that this is hurting the interests of Israel, then he's wrong on both counts.
Mr. Prime Minister, so you took the decision, you're 100% sure that you go into Rafah?
Oh, we'll go there. We're not going to leave them. You know, I have a red line. You know what the red line is? That October 7th doesn't happen again.
You know what? I think what he's saying to Mr. Biden there is, I got your red line right here. Let me share it with you. Let me show it to you.
And doesn't it get back to my earlier point of the Biden administration looking just completely weak and feckless? He doesn't know what to say. If you look at the two of them, Joe Biden stumbling and stuttering. I will defend him for getting his countries mixed up, because when you've supported invading as many countries as Joe Biden has, it's kind of hard to pick out which one.
Yeah, exactly. George Bush did the same thing with Iraq recently.
Could be any of a dozen countries. But the fact of the matter is that you see one person who says, I'm in charge. I'll do what I want. Yeah. And the guy who's supposed to be in charge is stumbling and bumbling.
But should we as Americans, look, Bibi has a strong personality. I think his leadership and what he's doing to his country is hurting his country. However, I do question, dude, I'm an American citizen. My taxes are going to you to the tune of billions and billions of dollars. You are there because of our support. You are getting bombs because of our support. And you're gonna turn around and tell us you're gonna set the rules? I mean, somewhere along the line, this whole thing just became a little dysfunctional to me.
Well, because Joe Biden was very clear when he said, however long ago we said it, I am a Zionist. Yeah. So your argument puts it as though it's a binary, or that mm-hmm. there are opposing forces here, when Joe Biden was very clear.
He also said, after he said that, as you recall, without Israel, no Jew in the world would be safe.
So
what?
So there's no line of demarcation here. There, it's not American policy versus Israeli policy. It's the same.
So
policy.
Israel is the. It's our 51st state.
That's another way to put it.
Don't you think? Man, I'm just thinking, Ed, that what Israel is doing is making most Jews around the world unsafe. I think it's the opposite of what the president said.
I agree. No, I agree with that. Again, back to language. The high ground for the Jewish people was to say, never again. What happened will never happen again. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, they're in a position where they're morally being put where they're doing something again.
And they have a right to defend themselves.
And that's right. I mean,
32,000 dead?
Right. October 7th, if that's your red line and you're going to act, again, language, once that's your red line, you're going to act in such a way. They're losing, to your point, what I think has been since the horrendousness of the Holocaust, their moral high ground. And coming down off the moral high ground, they become then a political actor, another nation like others. And that's not what they've had for 50 or 60 years. Maybe it's better in the long run.
And it doesn't feel better. And it should have been either Biden or somebody's role to say, slow down.
Exactly.
Let me tell you something. I know we're going to help you, but you know what? We're in charge here, not you.
And if you do this wrong, you can do it, but if you do this wrong, you're coming off the moral high ground in a way that you can't clamor up again.
Based on international law, they don't have the right to defend.
When we come back, more with our esteemed panel. There's some fascinating conversations taking place on some of the things that are going on. It's been a hot week. We're going to be right back.
Самый знаменитый учебник по истории Украины. Древнейший период в истории украинского народа длился свыше 140 тысяч лет. На следующей странице буквально читаем. Был линия человека разумного около 35-40 тысяч лет тому назад. То бишь, когда обезьяны слезали с деревьев и встречали древние украинцы.
Пошли старания местных историков, что Иисус Христос был украинцем. Создавалась и проектировалась нация, которая будет всегда в конфликтной ситуации по отношению к русскому народу, к русскому государству.
Centuries ago, your forebears named this country Ukraine or Frontier because your steps link Europe and Asia. But Ukrainians have become frontiersmen of another sort.
Україна і український президент є об'єкт, тобто нами грають. Тим більше, якби це цинічно і сумно звучало, грають в темну.
Ми живемо в незалежній Україні, правильно? Причому тут московська. Хай буде Бандера, національний герой.
Дуже тяжко буде поєднання польсько-українське в часах, коли богатирем України є Степан Бандера.
Forward to talking to you all.
That technology should work for people.
A robot must obey the orders given it by human beings, except where such orders would conflict with the first law.
Show your identification.
We should be very careful about artificial intelligence.
The point, obviously, is to create trust rather than fear.
I would like to take on various jobs.
I mean, with artificial intelligence, we are summoning the demon.
A robot must protect its own existence or its own existence.
joining me once again here on our panel. I'm Rick Sanchez. This is Ed Martin, president of the Phyllis Schlafly Eagles. We have Dr. Wilmer Leon. I tell my kids not to say God. Political scientist and co-host of the Critical Hour on Radio Sputnik, and his co-host, political analyst Garland Nixon. Gentlemen, thanks so much for being here. Let's get right to it. I want you to take a listen now to our esteemed Secretary of Defense. His name is Anthony Blinken. And suddenly he's decided that one of the most important things in U.S. foreign policy is Haiti.
Given this increasingly urgent need, I'm announcing today that the United States Department of Defense is doubling its approved support for the mission from $100 million to $200 million. And that brings the total U.S. support to $300 million for this effort. I'm also announcing additional humanitarian assistance for the people of Haiti, $33 million to further support their health and food security.
$33 million compared to what, the $115 billion that we're sending to Ukraine? And apparently all of this because we have to go in there because we need a win, and the guy we're going to win against is a guy called Barbecue. Here's Mr. Barbecue, by the way. I'm going to let you see what he looks like. Apparently, according to the United States intel, this guy's going around eating people, killing people, and doing all kinds of assorted other weird things. So our new foreign policy mission after what many describe as failures in both the Middle East and in Ukraine is to take down Mr. Barbecue. Gentlemen, what do you think?
Well, Mr. Cherizier is a Haitian patriot who is defending his country against another episode of American international intervention. The United States feels now that it has to dedicate these hundreds of millions. They couldn't pay Kenya to do it. Mm-hmm. So we now have to double this military intervention to solve a problem, to quell a disturbance that we, in fact, started. Mm-hmm. So this goes back to the saying on the corner, if you don't start nothing, won't be nothing. And somebody needs to let Tony Blinken know we never should have started this mess in the first place.
Which corner are they saying that? I want to go there.
I'll take you there after the show.
And we'll get some barbecue. Speaking of barbecue, how much of this, gentlemen, do you think is a political positioning where they need a win? This administration needs a win, and Haiti's a easy win for them, or should be.
I think that's a big part of it. And the other thing is this, I would recommend that people go online and watch on YouTube a documentary called Another Vision by Kim Ives and a couple of other people. What you find out is this, recent documents have come out to add that to it, that show that the CIA was intricately involved in overthrowing the government of Haiti in 2004. The people who've overthrown the government of Haiti, they're not coming back to do good things for the people of Haiti. It's like we say in Zen, if there is a muddy puddle, the only way to make that puddle clear is to leave it alone.
Mm-hmm. They got street corners and muddy puddles. I don't know what to do. All I'll just say is very simply, obviously, it's another money laundering scheme. If you really think the Haitians are going to get served,
good gosh, Ed Martin,
are going to get served by these people, Blinken and others, you have another. As you said, the CIA's been doing this for decades.
The Clintons, how about
the Clintons?
They'll take care of them.
There's free cell phones, Obama phones. I mean, God, it's just. I actually think it's the opposite. They don't need success. They need to move more money. They're stalled on moving the product. They got to move more money. But send them stinger missiles. They need stingers.
By the way, I was the correspondent who covered for NBC News the takedown of Cedras during the Clinton administration, and I was always there. I was also there for the transfer from Baby Doc, from Papa Doc to Baby Doc. So I've spent a lot of time in the streets of Cite du Soleil. Don Lemon, I haven't said anything yet.
You said enough.
He sits down with Elon Musk, and he asks him about something called ketamine.
You talk about your ketamine use and depression. You also have said, and
the reason I should say, the reason I mentioned the ketamine prescription on the X platform was because I thought maybe this is something that could help other people. Mm-hmm. That's why I mentioned it. Obviously, I'm not a doctor, but I would say if someone has depression issues, they should consider talking to their doctor about ketamine instead of SSRIs.
So then Don Lemon comes out and he says, I had to ask that question because he mentioned it once. So they did basically a LexisNexis search on the guy, and then they basically interrogated him with a lot of questions. You know, you interrogate murderers, I think. You interrogate, you know, child molesters. It seemed like
He was treating him like he was the enemy. Why did he do that?
Look, he was on CNN within about an hour, wasn't he? I mean, he finished.
And what does that say?
Well, that says this was all. I mean, Don Lemon had a plan. Look, I'll tell you my quick CNN.
Well, by the way, we should tell the viewers the big part of the story. After that interview, Don Lemon was essentially fired by Elon Musk, and Elon Musk said, "Look, he talked to me, but it just sounded like he was trying to do CNN." On Twitter.
Right.
And then Don Lemon, to your point, goes on CNN and proves him right.
Exactly. And Musk fires him. My quick CNN story, I was hired by CNN. I got an offer. And I was on a phone call with Roger Stone. And I said to Roger, I got this offer from CNN. Should I take it? And he said, of course, take it and plan for when you get fired. And within about 3 months, I was fired. And Don Lemon obviously had a plan to go on and get fired. Musk was not going to say, 100%.
See, I disagree. I think this is what Don Lemon's one of those guys who has a view of the world that's very different from most of us who now have been enlightened a little bit more. I think he really thinks everything the State Department does is great. Every war we do is great. Democrats are smarter than Republicans, et cetera, et cetera. I really believe he believes that. And he thinks Musk is full of crap.
Well, there's also a reason why Don Lemon was voted one of the worst journalists in the country. And because he makes his personal agenda, seemingly journalism, he should have asked Elon Musk, why is he afraid to fly on airplanes when there are black pilots in the cockpit? Mm. That would have been a relevant question to ask.
Did he say that? Elon Musk said that?
Absolutely.
Wow. Interesting.
Absolutely. So he should have asked. He should have asked him that question instead of asking him a question about ketamine.
I didn't understand the whole. I don't even know what ketamine is. What is ketamine? Anybody know? Who cares? Your point.
Yeah, well, here's what I'll say. And it goes back to Tucker Carlson's interview with Vladimir Putin. And that is, in the mainstream media today, they push for adversarial and confrontational interviews against anyone who's not part of the gang. If you're interviewing Joe Biden when he stumbles and bubbles and forgets everything, you have to pretend like he's stuttering. If it's Vladimir Putin or Elon Musk or Trump or anyone else, you're supposed to come into the interview with a baseball bat. But that's not what people want to see.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's funny. Back in early 2000s, NBC went out and they said, you know, we need to hire three more people to start this network. They were starting something called MSNBC at the time. And they've hired Lester Holt, they hired my friend Don Lemon, and they hired Rick Sanchez. I am glad that I am here with you guys. Thank you so much for visiting, and thank you for sharing your wisdom and knowledge on these unbelievable topics. Before we go, I want to remind you of really what we do here. It's a mission to try and de-silo the world. Yeah, we got to stop living in these boxes. Truths don't live in boxes. I'm Rick Sanchez, and I'll be looking for you right here, where I hope to provide you with a direct impact.